Hello, everybody. What's happening, Brian? We have another episode of Bootstrapped Web. What's going down? It's Friday.
Yeah, Jordan, we're back at it. We took a little bit of a week break there. Obviously, the world is still kind of turning upside down, and it's scary times out there. And you know, I think our hearts go out to everyone. We talked a lot about it last week, but we ended up not publishing. But you know, thought we'd try to get back on the mics and do just another Bootstrapped Web episode here.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot going on out there. I went to a rally yesterday organized by middle schoolers.
Did you?
A lot of parents with their kids, everyone holding signs. It felt, you know, it's kind of emotional, but it felt good to get out there. Yeah, we wish everyone else well out there. We're going to try to bring you some boring business stuff in this podcast.
Yeah, this morning we went to my daughter's kindergarten graduation parade where we drove around in our cars around the school and waved to the teachers. So,
yes. Yeah. That's different.
It's a whole new world.
It's a whole new thing, man. But we're getting through. What's happening, man? We got updates?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm getting into a bad habit. I have a bad habit I gotta figure out. I get busy during the day and I do calls and meetings during the day. And so my to-do list doesn't really get addressed. A few things that can kind of be banged down 15, 20 minutes here, but my big strategic tasks don't get tackled. And so what I do is I say to myself, okay, I'm going to do these calls because this is what makes sense for me to do. And then tonight I'm going to work on this strategic thing. Oof. And then so at night I don't have the energy mentally to do that. And then I feel guilty.
Yeah.
And I feel bad about myself. And I just do the exact same thing the next day.
I'm at an age now where I cannot work at, okay, I shouldn't say that. There are certain nights where I'm so active on developing a feature or something in the app that like I will come back online like late night and work into the late night hours on code. But generally, like that's 10% of the time. Generally, I'm just incapable of working after dinner now. I used to when I was younger, but now it's not happening.
Yeah.
I'm so much more focused and productive in the morning hours, you know.
Now
we're talking in the afternoon. I'm on my afternoon coffee here, which is becoming a requirement for me too.
Yes. I feel like I'm chasing that dragon of that evening session where you just are so happy and in it and making progress, because it happens maybe once a week for me. But then every other night doesn't happen. I'm just racked with guilt. And then I just do the same thing the next day. And I need to figure it out. I need to block out larger chunks of time, whatever.
Yeah, I've been biking in the morning now that the weather's nice. So I really do try to prioritize that. That's always hard for me because I wake up so energized, like ready to get to work because I want to take advantage of those early morning hours. But if I don't exercise in the morning, I'm not going to do it at all the rest of the day, you know? So I'm trying to do that.
Good for you. What about the business, my friend? What kind of updates we got today?
I've got a bunch of updates. I think they're kind of small, so maybe we can combine some of them, but I would say they're all sort of related to onboarding on ProcessKit. Everything is ProcessKit related today. That's basically most of my hours these days. It's a big focus on onboarding so that I can really dive into marketing and spending and doing outbound stuff, hopefully by early July. But I don't feel ready to do that until I really feel like the onboarding is all buttoned up and like from all angles. So
right. There's two ways to go on it. You can start the marketing and then you're forced into laying that next railroad track down in front of you for the onboarding. Or you can say, I don't want to put all that effort in if it doesn't make sense and there's no system there to really shuffle people through the process the right way. So you're going that way. You're saying, let's get the onboarding ready before I can focus on marketing.
Here's how I'm thinking about it. I'm starting to think about the whole concept of onboarding to a SaaS as there's four types of users, right? There's type one, which is like, figure it out myself. These are like the power users, the majority of the early customers in ProcessKit. And I would probably think that any SaaS app where it's sort of like you're building features and you're onboarding customers, the early folks, they are technical enough, they are savvy enough, they're understanding enough and motivated enough to make it through a complete lack of onboarding experience. They'll just figure it out and, you know, with whatever you give them. Level two is like, users who need more self-serve guidance. So they're still self-serve. They don't really want to talk to anyone. They don't need too much, but they do need some pointers and like, okay, how do things work? I want to follow some cues, like show me the way a little bit inside the app. And then there's the third type of user, which is like, I need that guidance, but I also need to be educated. I also need to like, give me a whole system and framework that I want to learn the best strategy.
Yes.
And then how to implement the software with that strategy. That's the third type of user. And then the fourth level is like, I want somebody to work with me personally, one-on-one, like a consultant to help me do this really well and to guide the whole process, hold my hand. And so with Process Kit, I feel like the level one users have to figure it out myself. That's been the status quo since I've been onboarding customers. And the fourth level, the consulting, I've done that with some customers as well. Some have paid for that. Some have done a lighter version of that where I'm just, you know, actively getting on calls with people. The third level, that like I need education plus some guidance, I just launched that this week with the course. I've been talking about that finally went live a few days ago. I'm happy with that, how it came out. That's at processkit.com/process automation. It's called Process Automation for Service Companies. And so the idea there is that it's a video course, 12 videos. I'm like at the desk teaching lessons, teaching these strategy concepts. And then the video cuts to me setting up Process Kit to do what I'm teaching in the lessons, right? So it's like some education and setup. That's not for everyone, you know, because then we get down to that level two onboarding, which is like, there are people who already have a pretty solid idea on what their processes and systems need to be and need to look like. They know the specific pains in their business and they have a good business sense of how to solve them with processes, but they still need some guidance on like, how does Process Kit work? How can I get this set up and up and running? And what is a board compared to a process and a project and a task list? What are the difference between those things? And how do I set up these automations? I know I want to do these automations, but how do I set them up? That is where I'm at right now. So that's where I feel like there's a gap right now with Process Kit, is that like, I've got this welcome video, but then after that, there's nothing. It's like you're figuring out everything. Mm-hmm. So what I started to work on this week now, I think it'll be launched by next week, is like a pop-up widget, which is a checklist for new users. There's like four or five steps that I've figured out that like for the people who have converted, you at least need to create a process and then create a project and run that process on the project. You need to customize a board and understand the purpose of automating through a board. And then sort of an optional step is to invite a teammate. And then on the checklist, I have like, now, you know, activate your subscription. And like the last step is like, get your free Process Kit t-shirt, you know? And I'm setting up this widget that like slides up like a little toaster on the bottom left corner. And it automatically detects if you've done each thing and it'll check them off. And each thing has like a little link. You can watch a quick video, like a 30-second video on how to do that thing. And there's definitely a way to like click to like minimize this or click yes. to hide it altogether. I don't want to do your stupid checklist, you know. I'm probably one of those users in other SaaS apps, but I do think that there's a segment of users, maybe even a large majority, who are like, just I don't want to click around and guess. Just show yes, me the step by step. You know, it's not like a wizard that like points around the screen. It's just
right,
a little
not tooltip
corner. But yeah, not tooltip. It's just in the corner and it kind of gives you a list of things to do.
Yeah. You know? All right. So you're thinking about it from these various types of users. What does each one need in order to be successful?
Yeah. That's cool. This is really an experiment, like with the onboarding widget thing. Like I don't know if it's going to be like, this is annoying, get it out of my face. But if it helps people get educated, then
it's fine. Whatever you need to do. I mean, we definitely come across that first category of people who just want to get going and they feel comfortable and they want to figure it out on their own. And our process forces them to stop and talk to us. And some don't like it. It's just true. What we've done is admitted defeat on that first type. and said, our product isn't at a place right now where it can successfully handle them. And so we're just not going to allow you to do that. We're just going to have to force you into this version 2 and version 3 and version 4 because that's what's necessary for us right now.
Yeah,
we would love to capture.
I still get a fair number of demos. I do now I'm doing a little bit more, like maybe 5 a week. There's links in the widget. There's links over email and everything to like, hey, book your call. Want to talk to me? Like, let's book a demo. Like, there's a bunch of call to actions for that. And so I get a bunch of those calls. I think the nature of my app compared to something like Cardhook, that you could sort of, Cardhook, I would think you could sort of like get it set up and get value pretty quickly and start paying. Whereas with ProcessKit, even when I talk to them, they have to go back and play with it themselves after the call.
Right, right.
You know,
for us, it's danger. That's what it is for us. It's a lot of scar tissue on people getting set up on their own and getting it 98% right, but they missed 2%, and that can cost them a lot of money, and then turns into a lot of frustration. And that's almost what we've had to eliminate. So we don't have the buffer in place, the bumpers along the road to really keep everyone from making mistakes. So we have to address these issues. There's so many little things. Like for us, if you leave one setting in your Shopify store that is just called rest of the world, like if you have your shipping settings and you have rest of the world checked out, and it's not relevant for a lot of businesses, but even if it is checked out, our product will have a problem with it. And people will go through and they won't be charged shipping. And you won't know it for a while. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, oh my God, I just blew through $5,000 worth of shipping that I can't get back. And now I hate you. So you'll learn these things too on what you can and can't do. Hopefully you can start off with that wider range and accommodate these different types of use cases and different types of users.
There's still a very common use case. And that's, I think, what this little checklist is aimed at. Giving you this guide.
Give me some. Like, don't make me go through a course, but give me some.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you could literally burn through this checklist in 20 minutes. It's super simple and like first create a process and then you hover over. It just gives you like a step one, step two, step three. Just like go to processes, create one, create a step. Okay, you're good. And then it's like create a project, go to projects, apply the process, done. And so the idea is that like this won't completely set up the processes in your business. But if you go through these four steps, you will understand how the models in process can work.
The logic.
Like the logic of taking a process template and copying it into a task list, like an instance in a project. I still see users like not make that jump. There are customers who've converted and they've figured that out, but there's still users who's like, oh, I like, how do I use the process? It's like, go make it a task list. Like,
yes. All right, cool. On my side, a lot of the focus and excitement is around recruiting and hiring. So we made an offer and it was accepted to our first fully remote hire. I guess not first, but first in a very long time, in like 3 years. And so the employees in Los Angeles, it exposed a few shortcomings on our side on both the recruiting and the hiring. And I split those two out. So if we just go further up the funnel and we talk about recruiting, I've had difficulty in finding the type of service and help that we need. So what happened was we put Rock in charge of hiring engineers and we put Emily in charge of hiring for success and support. And what happened was that just obliterated their task list. It just took over because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so I saw that and I kind of saw my job to double click on that and say, hey, should we take this away? Should we remove this from your desk entirely? Should we hire a recruiter? And they both said, you know, very much, yes, we cannot do this again. So let's finish this process. But the next time we hire someone, we can't do this because it's a full-time job.
Well, I guess you're on the recruiting side. Yes. I guess once you get to the whatever, like
hiring or onboarding.
Hiring, like I'm curious about it. How do you evaluate developers? Like, are you doing test projects and things like that?
Yeah, they are doing tests. Okay, so let's take one step back. Our biggest issue wasn't what I think of as recruiting. I think of recruiting as like going out and finding great people. that hasn't been the issue. There's a lot of talent out there, a lot of people looking for remote work. There's a lot of avenues to look, whether it's WeWork remotely or these other places. We happen to find a lot of success with WeWork remotely. So that's our go-to place.
Us too.
So we don't have trouble finding candidates. But once we have 200 resumes in an inbox, that's where the issue is for us. Because sorting through and making sure that the candidates get the experience that we believe they deserve, right? Whether you get rejected or not, you do deserve a good process. At least that's how we want to approach it. So that is when it becomes overwhelming. So when I talk to recruiting agencies, they're like, we're going to find you the best candidates, and then we're going to charge you a percentage of their salary because we help find them. And my point of view is we don't need help finding them. We just need help running the process. And so what's that? That's not a recruiting agency. So now I'm looking for that person. I think it's a freelancer, someone who's worked in recruiting before that just understands, here, let's get your company set up with a process. And good also, point,
you know, that ideas for a productized service, this is a good one. I see a lot of ideas for productized services. I have not seen this one, but when I think about audience ops, this is one of those processes that we have really figured out a system, and I put a person in charge of, and she's running that funnel of recruit when we're hiring writers. And it's a funnel. It's work. And it took a lot of work for us to figure out how to get that set up. And that's the kind of thing that can plug in as a service.
You know? Absolutely. And we want both. We want the advice on how to run the process so that candidates get a good experience and we get a good outcome. And we also don't want to do it. But this is definitely something you can plug into a business where, yes, you need to understand the culture of the business and the product, but not that deeply, right? Like, we'll still do the interviews. Maybe the first interview the service can do, but we're still going to get deep into the process and meet with them. I mean, I would pay thousands of dollars for this thing because
I mean, there are things like, what's the big developer one? TopTal.
Yes.
You know,
and we use TopTal all the time.
Yeah. And I've used for virtual assistants, I've used Virtual Staff Finder, which is specific to the Philippines, and it's like $500, and they give you 3 pre-vetted candidates, and they give you their whole resume. They give you a little voice recording from each of them and all this stuff. And like, I've done that multiple times through that service. And out of the 3, I would end up maybe hiring 2. And that's good. But I still think like what you're talking about, like something a little bit higher level. TopTal seems more like we're going to just set you up with 1 engineer.
We've done both. We use TopTal continuously. I mean, I see it on my credit card statement every single month. So they're using it all the time. But we'll use it for very targeted things. Like, we moved to Amazon QuickSight for our internal analytics. And no one has experience with QuickSight. So you just go to TopTal, you find someone with QuickSight background, and then you can just hire them. And it's much more expensive than if you just hired a freelancer, but the risk is a lot lower because you know they're pretty good. And it's targeted. So I'll spend $2,500 a week for 3 weeks, but then no one on the team has to learn it, and it gets done and you move on.
So you use TopTal for like hired guns, like freelancers. Yes,
exactly right. Yeah, we
not hiring full-time salary employers.
Employees. No, I believe they do have a program where you can hire that person full-time if both sides agree. And then I think you pay them some type of recruiting fee. Because we've had that before. We have people on TopTal that we absolutely love, and we just don't have that much work for them to do for full time. But I could see a situation where we would love to hire someone full time. But this, right, this is outside of that process. I don't know if anyone's listening, thinking about a productized service like this, but there's definitely an audience for it. When I talk to the lowest, cheapest recruiting agency that I've come across is $2,500 a month per role, plus 8% of salary. So let's just say it's a $75,000 salary times 8%. That's $6,000. Let's say it takes 2 months to find them. So now you're talking about $11,000 to find a candidate. And that is like as cheap as you can find it.
Yeah.
So a productized service that comes to me and says, we will run this for $5,000 per candidate, I will write that check.
Yeah. For audience ops, when we need to hire a new writer, it's like we have sort of a template now, but we have to write the job ad. That's a whole project in itself.
That's right.
Figure out where to post it, then go post it. Then that leads to our own form on our website. That feeds into a Trello board that Kat on my team has to go through and filter out, like just get rid of all the definitely no-go candidates. That's a whole day at least of work. And then it's like making a short list and writing notes about these 5 or 10 candidates. Then it's like kind of reviewing the short list with me, and I'll say like, okay, maybe these 4 are worth interviewing. Then she goes ahead and does those first interviews. And then she gives me more notes after the interview. And then she sort of makes a recommendation on who she thinks is the top 1 or 2. And then I'll make a final call, and occasionally I'll do an interview with them, but lately I'll just say like, yeah, go with the one that you think. And that's like a month of back and forths of work.
You know? Yes. So that is difficult. And now we're looking at the prospect of hiring like another 4 people. So it's no longer an option. We cannot do that internally. Yeah. If it's one person, it's kind of like making a bargain with that team leader of, all right, I'm going to spend a bunch of time, but I'm going to hire someone on my team and it's going to be good. All of a sudden you look at the prospect of doing that for the next 3 months and it's no longer a possibility. And the engineering side of it is also very different. Like I almost feel guilty, almost like when I was an older member of my fraternity and I saw like these freshmen and what they were going to go through, I like was not okay with that. I was like, this is ridiculous. Why are we torturing these people? So I almost feel that way about engineering. It's, the tests are hard. And then you have in-person interviews where you're coding live, and then you're like, it's almost not sneaky, but you are making it challenging.
Yeah.
So, right. So the guys on the team, they will put out a problem that they know there's something wrong with the problem, and they're almost looking for the person to challenge the problem itself. And then they'll actually bring them issues that we're in the middle of. Like, here's something we're trying to figure out. Let's spend an hour together trying to figure it out.
Right.
And to me, that's, it's almost like harsh. I think I'm soft on it because we require softer skills on the support, success, marketing side of things, and math don't care. So yeah. It's a different thing on the engineering side.
Yeah. 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 After they've made it through the technical evaluations, like any personality fit kind of stuff that you do with, especially with developers or
we don't,
I guess anyone, but
we don't do personality tests or anything like that, but no, we but
like, what are you looking for? And like, how involved are you in the like interviewing?
I'm not very involved at all. I get involved at the very end, which I have seen the problem with that. So we look for personality at every interaction. How do they email? How do they talk? How do they talk about themselves? How comfortable are they? And on the engineering side, it is a challenge because the personality set there is generally less personable.
Yep.
And so how do you judge based on that? So that's actually pretty tricky. When it comes to the process, I usually do the last interview. And so we are in the middle, we're just about to make an offer. When we finish this podcast, I'm sending out an offer letter to a new engineer. And this was a lead role for a new project. And so a lot of pressure on this role. And so I met him and then there was still another meeting or two afterward. But normally speaking, let's say a new support engineer, the person we just hired, I'm the last interview, which feels, it's tricky because what am I supposed to do at that point? Like,
yes,
like is nope. No an option? Right. It would have to be extreme for me to say, everyone did all this work. They went through all these different layers. They met with the team lead. They met with the rest of the team. They met with everybody. And then it comes to me and then I'm going to say no. So that's generally a bad thing because it's not a real interview. It's just a get to know you. And what I try to talk about is the company history and the culture and what we're trying to do and where we're going. For me, it's almost like, are you interested in this? Because yeah. We want people who are really excited about what we're doing. And so when I spoke with the engineer, what am I going to ask him about? you know, actual engineering. No, I can't. Yeah. So we just talked about the future and we talked about ideas and what we see with the ecosystem and the evolution of platforms and all this other stuff. And
do you look for people who have done the thing or a similar type of task that you're basically hiring them to do? I know you're not hiring them for one task, but like you said that this engineer is being hired to lead a big project. Do you look for like finding someone who has led something similar to this type of thing in the past?
We do. It's not a requirement, but we do look for indicators that make us believe that there's higher likelihood of success. So amazing Laravel experience, obviously good. Amazing Laravel experience in e-commerce, that's a bonus. Because now we're able to talk about the same language. And we're talking about conversion rates and load speed. It's not seen from the admin point of view on, oh, let's make a fast app. It's no, this is required because the shopper's on it. So there are things we look for. The support engineer we just hired, not as much. Mm-hmm. So she needed technical ability and communication skills. And that not specifically, you have been a support engineer in the past with a SaaS and this is what you did.
Right.
Yeah. We try not to have that many of those requirements. I don't see us as like, a lot of times people take pride in where people have worked. Like our team is made up of former Airbnb and Uber employees. Right. And like, that's so impressive. I think that's complete bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're like anti that. We're like, we don't care what you did in the past. We're happy to be like a band of misfits in some way that doesn't have credentials. And we're doing just fine without it. So we take some pride in ignoring the companies you worked for in the past and how awesome your resume is or anything like that. We ignore that.
It's still so hard, man. Like it's so hard to uncover what you're going to learn after you've already hired people. I've seen this time and time again. Like
scary.
I think me and especially Kat, who's mostly in charge of hiring at Audience Ops, like we really know... Maybe it's hard. It's even probably difficult for us to document these sorts of things, but we know the personality characteristics and the types of things that someone says and the recent experience of where that indicate like they're the type of long-term multi-year teammate material here. And I've had other conversations where they're super talented, but I could just tell from the way that they're approaching everything that like, they're going to be in and out within a couple months and we can, but then the hardest thing is that even when I see people are just really good at interviewing sometimes it's unfortunate, but it's true. Like some people have a unique ability to adapt to an interview process and understand
what
the company is looking for. Right. Like, and things are different once they're inside. And it's, you know, I've been surprised time and time again.
Yeah. And it's everything. And the mistakes in hiring are more costly than any monetary mistake.
Yeah.
Like buying the wrong thing, using the wrong software, hiring the wrong consultant. Those are like, I see them as like monetary mistakes. When you make a hiring mistake, it hurts so much more. So we are so hesitant on it. And as my role has gotten further away from the work itself, and it really is, how are these teams operating and how are the processes going and who do we need and what's next and what hurts? I take all that responsibility on. And it's two-sided because at the beginning of the process, you're trying to show this dream of where this thing can go and how interesting and exciting and how big the potential is. And then the pressure's on to show that. So when we've gone through long stretches of like flat periods, right? We've had a few stretches. We've had two specific 6 month long stretches where revenue just got stuck, right? There was once at like 80 and there was once at like 150 and it just stuck for months. And I get so stressed about how people are perceiving their experience because the clock's ticking. Mm-hmm. There's other opportunities out there. I don't want to stay at something that isn't growing for very long. And it's not about the money. It's not about like, well, this is moving toward an exit, so I want to get out of here because I'm not going to get a big payday. That's not it. It's just something about stagnation that becomes frustrating. in a way that when there's growth, even though it's frustrating, it's still fun and exciting. And like, you feel like, okay, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. It's going to get better.
Yeah. And like that, people who are contributing, it's like, oh, I'm part of what's happening here with the graph.
Yes. And it hurts, but isn't this awesome? And when the growth isn't there, that isn't this awesome part starts to fade. Then I get scared. Hmm.
So it's definitely a tough thing.
What else you got going on?
I got three things, but maybe it's two combined. So one of them is this thing that came up. I wasn't expecting to do this, but I think it's going to work out really well. About 2 weeks ago, had a lead for a process kit. I'm trying to remember exactly. Yeah, I think he came in and he requested a demo for a process kit. I got on a call with him, and he's a copywriter based down in Buenos Aires. And I think it's just him, and he just recently hired an assistant, and he's starting that process of just early growth into a small marketing shop. And that growth switch is usually the indicator that brings somebody to Process Kit. So we got the demo. He's really excited about Process Kit, had a bunch of questions about it. I always ask them about their business and tell me about the kind of work that you do. And the work that he's doing is he writes copy for SaaS, B2B SaaS businesses, and he's starting to productize around writing those alternative to pages. So product, like alternative to your top competitor.
Yes.
And we see a lot of these
really powerful pages.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You probably have them. Like that was on my to-do list to do sometime soon, but I have not gotten around to creating those pages yet.
Did you get sold on your own demo? Is that what happened?
Yes. He did. Well, he turned the tables on me, and we bartered. So he's basically a technically paying customer of Process Kit. And I basically gave him, you know, a pretty big Process Kit plan in exchange for him writing three of these pages for Process Kit.
That is awesome. In a competitive space, those pages are huge. We see, you know, email marketing, that the types of very competitive spaces.
We're in the very early stage of this process. I think they'll probably come out maybe in a month or two, but I'm really excited. And this guy is doing just an awesome job just based on my early conversations and the research that I'm seeing him do. And we're doing it in a really interesting way that I hadn't even considered this angle on it before. I have more than three competitors, but we agreed to just do three pages. So I just chose like the top three that I want to focus on. One of them is like I would say a very direct competitor. And so that page is going to be positioned as like alternative to direct competitor, you know, or direct competitor versus blank. And then hopefully they land on Process Kit, right? And then a whole bunch of copy around all the benefits and differences. And he's pulling like real quotes off of like review sites about the competitor and stuff like that.
I like this service.
But the other two that we're going to do are, so we're going to compare against Trello and compare against Asana. And so those are project management apps.
For SEO.
Well, we get a lot of users who are coming to Process Kit because Trello does a really poor job of like recurring tasks in Trello or recurring tasks in Asana. And so we're not really going to optimize these pages for alternative to Trello. We're going to optimize these pages for recurring tasks in Trello. And then like optimize a page for like recurring projects and recurring tasks in Asana, or like processes in Asana. Like these are things that those tools are really poor at. And that's usually what drives people to Process Kit. And I've already done a lot of like customer user research a couple months back with literally like numbers of like the number of users who said they're trying to switch from Asana and Trello. And it's a large group, you know, people coming from like Basecamp and other things, but like, and he's starting to do the keyword research, and there's a ton of search traffic for that kind of stuff. And so yes. I think that these are going to be really, really good pages, you know, like again, like not trying to position it as like the catch all be all alternative to Trello. But if you have a very repeatable process and you're trying to do that in Trello and it's not working because it's not great at that, then look at this.
You know? Yes. Here's an alternative that you probably didn't know existed.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how those come together. It's nice because, you know, he's doing a lot of the work, and I will design the pages once the copy is done, but that'll come together in a few weeks. So,
wow, yeah. That's very interesting. The ability to draft off of existing traffic from much larger platforms and have that indirectly compared with your product. That I like that. I talked to someone yesterday. It's a bit tricky to know what to do with B2B marketing these days. B2B SaaS marketing. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. You kind of don't know what to do. Nobody attends webinars anymore. Ads are tough to make work and they're expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of people are kind of like, I don't really know what to do next. And I feel that. Like we just launched this ad campaign finally. It took longer. Most of the delay was on our fault, but it's like a calculator. And like that's our approach to, well, let's not do the straightforward lead magnet thing. Let's give people this ability to calculate how much they can make with our product. And then if that sounds good to them, fill out a form to get a demo. Like that's our attempt at like, well, let's try something else. What you're talking about right now, I love because a lot of people in our space, meaning like Bootstrap, SaaS, they don't have the big budgets, but they often have very large competitors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got into Christensen's Innovator's Dilemma recently. And one of the things about it is that ability to really identify something pretty small and do that better. There was a tweet by Austin Allred, the guy from Lambda School.
Yep.
He wrote, right, the way to disrupt something isn't to replace 100% of what it provides. It's to unbundle and do a tiny piece of it better for people who really care about that one tiny piece and let everyone else scoff at you because you don't do the rest.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's and like, that, you're not going to do what Asana does. Well, you're not competing with that for years.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can crush this repetitive task thing that there's a subset of people that really care about that. And that's why they're using Asana.
Honestly, this is that thing that like, you know, the mental weight you called it like kind of searching through the desert with an early SaaS. Like I'm going like day to day on like, I'm trying to compete in a space that's just way too competitive, can't do it. Or the concept that I'm trying to get across is too complicated, processes, templates turning into task lists, that's too weird. But then I get customers who this happened twice this week, two different customers. They were Googling and they're like, I'm using Basecamp for my client services. For my small agency, and it's just like I'm trying to, it's fitting like a round peg in a square hole or whatever the metaphor is there. Like,
but they don't know who else to use, and they heard Basecamp is great, so that they're forcing themselves into it.
They're like, look, we have this process, it repeats, but then I've got to like redo all these different dates, and I've got to like make a client a project, but that doesn't sound right, and like I've got to like have this template card that I duplicate, but then it's a little bit different each time. And when they come to me and they talk about Process Kit, they're like, "This is the tool that I've been looking for." I'm not kidding. Like they say things like that, but it's the people who it's a small subset of the larger ocean that is project management tools. There's a small subset of people who are super process oriented, and it still feels like a battle trying to get those big PM tools to work in this process driven way, you know? And the other thing I'm excited about with this alternative two pages is that the guy, like he came to Process Kit and he wanted to become a cut, like he pitched me on the whole barter thing. So he is a user of Process Kit. He feels the pain himself.
So he can really articulate it.
He really articulates it, and he's writing about it, and like, you know, and all this stuff. So
that's cool. I love that. I think a lot of people listening, myself included, have that same dilemma. You just don't have the resources of these monster competitors. You don't know how you could ever compete with them. It's really hard to see from your perspective inside the company what it looks like when there's this large pool of people, and then there's a subset that will be fanatical about what you do. If you don't try to compete with the big ones, if you do your thing, like our whole company is this very, very narrow unbundling of an e-commerce platform, because e-commerce platforms have so much to do that they can't innovate on the checkout nearly the same way a company that's obsessed with the checkout can.
Yeah.
And that tendency of, well, maybe we should build an e-commerce platform. Like all these things are, they're mental They're like, but we're not good enough and we'll never get big enough. And yep. really the best thing to do is just go so hard at what you're good at.
But that's also like, that's also one of the things that I stress out about is that I feel like maybe I'm, maybe ProstaKid is not narrow enough.
Oh, interesting. You know?
But then I have these conversations where it's like, people do feel this pain and we do have customers who convert. It's just, I need to find more of them, you know, and there's still a lot of noise in the pool of people who start trials and they don't quite get it or whatever, but they're, you know, like the other day I had a churn and that, then it's like, oh shit, this whole thing is not going to work.
Yes. I feel that,
you know, but then the next day a guy had a demo. I had a demo with him 3 or 4 months ago. And again, he was looking, you know, small marketing shop. He was looking for a process oriented PM tool. Excited about ProstaKid. We had a call 3 months ago and then he's asking for like these specific features that I'm like, ah, that's like the next thing on our roadmap. Oh, that's coming soon. It's like, he's like, okay, like I love it. I love where you're going, but it's, I can't use it yet until it has like dynamic dates and things like that. So he just came back this week and he brought his like manager onto the call with him. And he's like, I saw some of the updates. It looks like ProstaKid is ready now. And now they're like super excited.
Yes.
It's like, you know, little anecdotal things that it's like, okay, it didn't work for them 3 or 4 months ago, but their alternatives still are not working for them. And they still kept tabs and actually came back. And I'm seeing that happen multiple times now. So it's like, I see some hope, but I have not seen the, you know, I'm still waiting for, I haven't started working on the growth part of it yet.
Yes. Know? And it requires long-term faith. It took us, I would say, 3 years before we were at the point where I would see a big customer request a demo or start a trial and have the confidence that chances are we'll keep them. Right? In the beginning, it was, we're just not going to have the features that they want. Yeah. And then it was, but we're not going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And then, oh, this is going to be a blocker. And then just years of work on those blockers. Now, when I see someone come in, I'm like, we're probably going to get them. It's probably going to work out now. Yep. But it took a long time to get there. But that those anecdotes along the way are what keep the flame going of optimism. Yep. Like, yes, I'm in the, going in the right direction. Going in the right direction.
For sure.
Cool, man. That might be a good place for us to stop. I don't really have anything else on my side. I can talk about hiring next week and onboarding remote employees and that sort of thing. But
yeah, I can keep talking all day, but I think this was good.
Sounds good, man. Great to see you. Thanks everybody for listening.
All right. Stay safe out there. Later.